This is a podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. It ran for more than 1,000 episodes over more than a decade on two networks, and still today, more than 25 years after the final episode went to air, it is very fondly remembered. A Country Practice was a two-episode-a-week, hour-long drama based around the residents of a small country town, Wandon Valley, and the doctors and nurses of the local hospital. Many cast and characters came and went over those many years, and now some of the story will be told in a new podcast called A Country Podcast, as presented by Melanie Tate and Kim Lester. Well, Melanie, welcome back to the show, and Kim, welcome to the show for the first time.
It's so nice to be here, Rod. Thank you for having us.
Mel, whose idea was it to do this podcast about A Country Practice?
Do you know what? This was the brilliant Kim Lester's idea. So we had been wanting for years to work together on a podcast because we, you know, we're great friends, and whenever we catch up together, we tend to just talk a lot about podcasts and we like the same things. And so Kim came to me with this idea and the name because she's a genius, and we got to developing it together from there.
Well, I can tell you, as soon as I heard the name, I thought, brilliant. What a great title. And it's no surprise to me that, Kim, it was your idea. So why? What's the obsession with A Country Practice?
I don't know if I'd call it an obsession so much, but I feel like the time is right for this show to be revisited because, for one thing, obviously we're in the middle of a pandemic and life is stressful. And I know, I don't know about other people, but I have been seeking out nostalgic, comforting TV that I recognise and I trust. And I think A Country Practice is one of those television shows. And the other thing is, I mean, one of my favourite shows last year was The Handmaid's Tale. You know, I watch these really stressful drama series because they're brilliant television, but I come away feeling tense and I hold on to that tension for days afterwards. And A Country Practice just isn't like that. You know, I think it's time to let go of the tense TV and just watch something that is much more comforting.
How much did you watch of the show at the time, Kim? Did you watch all of it? Were you old enough to watch it from the start?
Well, I was one when the show came out, so I definitely don't remember those really key moments. Like, I really don't remember Molly dying. I don't remember a lot of
things. Spoiler alert, come on,
please. Oh, sorry. We have warned people there will be spoiler alerts in A Country Podcast. But what I remember about it is the memories that my family built around this show, because I have older sisters and older cousins who I was really close to, and we all used to play A Country Podcast. It was part of our imagination games. And so for me, what's special about A Country Practice isn't necessarily the TV show itself. It's the memories that I have of playing with my family members and enjoying their company.
What role did you play?
I was Chloe. I was the perfect age to be Chloe, and everyone used to fight over who could be Molly.
Wow. Okay. Spoiler alert. She does die. Mel, did you watch it from the start, or were you too young as well?
No, I'm the same. Kim and I are the same age. I feel like I have memories of Molly dying, but I can't because I was 4 years old as well when she died. I have really vivid memories, though, Rod, of being a child. You know, both of my parents worked really hard, and you know, we didn't see a lot of them, but I have really vivid memories of having to have my bath before 7:30, and the minute that music started, we were all on the couch together watching it. Like, that's my most vivid memory of it. Plus, I remember one of the characters that I loved dying very suddenly when I was about 7, and I remembered that. Kim and I were so surprised. I remembered it in almost forensic detail. Wow. So yeah, I remember a lot of the show. It's stayed in my memory as I've grown older as one of my favourite shows, but I was never able to actually return to watching it until 7 Plus put it on Channel 7 recently.
For those who may not be all that familiar with A Country Practice, maybe they are your age and missed it first time round. Kim, do you want to just give us a brief outline of how the story's unfolded? What was the idea of A Country Practice?
So Dr. Terence and Dr. Bowen, Dr. Simon Bowen, are the two doctors at a little practice. But because it's a small town, they're also the key doctors in the hospital. They're also the surgeons. You know, it's yeah, very much a country town. But I think what it's really about is a tight-knit community of people. We know the main characters. We know the 12 or so key people. But each week we meet somebody else in the town who is a guest spot, who has some sort of health issue or social issue or something going on in their life that a storyline is built around. And through those people, we learn about things like HIV. We learn about things like birth control and how old you can be to go on the pill. We learn about environmental issues. We learn about social issues. The thing that is quite remarkable about A Country Practice is that we don't always learn about them through those main characters, which if you've ever watched a soap opera, it gets a little bit exhausting when the main characters that you know and love seem to have every single crazy thing happen to them each and every week, and you feel like it's a bit ridiculous. What A Country Practice does is introduces all of the people in the community, you know, the people who live on the farms around Wandon Valley, and we get to know their story briefly. And the doctors and nurses and publicans and policemen, who are the main characters, help to resolve those issues for them.
Can that also be a problem, Mel, in that, you know, if you meet somebody on the Monday night episode, they're going to be dead by the end of the Tuesday night?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Like when they get set up and we start to, you know, feel for this person, you think, oh my gosh, what is going to happen to this sacrificial lamb, this episode? You kind of always, but it's an interesting and really deft thing that the writers of the show managed to do that. I'm not sure about Kim, but even when I am sitting watching it now, I tend to become involved in their stories quite quickly and forget that they're going to be dead or at least in a coma in the next 20 minutes or so. So I think it's an act of kind of quiet genius on the writers' part, considering they were doing something like 98 episodes a year.
Tell me about the podcasts that you both like, because unlike some where they go through episode by episode, you can't do that. There's over 1,000 episodes. We'd never finish it. What's the format of the podcast going to be, Kim?
So what we've decided to do is make it random. And the main reason for this is because people like Mel and I, our memories aren't necessarily from the A Country Practice of 1981. And so we want to be able to get to the Georgie Parker episodes and the Joe Mitchell episodes. And we want to be able to talk about the full range of cast and writers and storylines of A Country Practice fairly quickly, rather than waiting weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and years to get to them. So we've decided to make it quite random. The other thing is that it's not a forensic scene by scene breakdown of what happened in the episode. What we're actually doing is looking at, one, the social history of Australia at the time that the episode went to air. So if we're looking at season 7, for example, that went to air in 1987, and we are discussing what Australians were doing, what was the number one song, what's the social issue that that is covered in the episode, and how was that impacting Australians in real life at the time? And then the other thing that we're doing, and Melanie is amazing with this, is we're looking at the family tree of A Country Practice and where all of the branches extend. Who are the writers and the actors, and where did they end up? Where did their careers take them?
Mel, can we go back to the roots of A Country Practice, perhaps, rather than where the branches extended eventually, to where it came from? Because James Davin was the man who devised the series. He'd worked on a lot of TV shows, including Bellbird, and there's a lot of Bellbird in A Country Practice, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I haven't actually seen or know much about Bellbird, but it's something that along the way, since we've been doing A Country podcast, we've had quite a few people refer to. And everything that I read about Bellbird, because I don't think there's much of it on YouTube, suggests that there's a really similar DNA. Obviously, there's the James Davin DNA, the creator of both series, but there's the country town aspect. Yeah. There's the realness of country town life, but also the sort of gentleness of it. So it seemed they were the stories that James Davin really wanted to tell. I mean, we don't know. We haven't been able to speak with him. It definitely shares that cultural DNA for sure.
So one of the things, as you look at it, you know, and looking at it through the prism of Australia at the time, was it's not a particularly diverse program. It's very white. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say, Mel?
It's extremely fair to say. And, you know, for such a progressive show, Rod, and a show that still stands up politically as being very progressive, you know, the opinions of the various characters, the way that the medical issues are shown, it all stands up, you know, the sexual politics, the gender politics, etc., disability politics, they all stand up fairly well in this 2020 context, except for the fact that, like you said, it's a very white show. Occasionally there'll be actors, you know, people of colour come through. There might be a bit of a multicultural storyline, but there's definitely not a reflection of diversity the way that we know it today. And that's something that we are going to actually investigate a little bit further on in the series, because it's stark. You know, it's really stark.
There's no Indigenous story. Or maybe there was. Yes. I mean, sure, there must have been. But, considering country towns in Australia.
Yeah, there's actually a famous Indigenous story in this that, again, speaks to the progressive politics of this show. I can't remember which year it was. It might have been maybe about 91 or 92. James Davin, apparently, and this is all on Gary Foley, the Aboriginal activist, Facebook page, James Davin got in touch with Gary Foley to see if he would do a guestie on the show. And Gary Foley said, yeah, I'd really like to, but on these terms. And so they figured out a way that Gary Foley could be on the show completely within his own agency. He was very heavily involved in the script writing and in the development of the character. And a really interesting thing that happened afterwards is the Dr. Alex. Do you remember Dr. Alex?
Yes, Di Smith.
Played by Di Smith. Yeah. Yeah, she was married to Dr. Terrence, and she left the show to go and work in a remote Indigenous community. Yeah, and that was all very much part of that storylining with Gary Foley. So it's, okay. You know, I think that it's interesting in that when they did delve into those storylines, it seems like they did them with respect, you know, and with
but,
real conscientiousness.
Yeah, but right at the very end of the series, they've taken 10 or 11 years to get to that point, haven't they?
Yeah, they absolutely have. 1989 was that Gary Foley storyline I've just looked up. But no, I completely agree with you. And I think it also speaks to a broader issue in Australia and something that we're not very good at looking at ourselves as Australians and thinking about the stories that we tell in our media and also the way that we tell them. I mean, I certainly, growing up in the 90s, I probably knew a lot more about the African American story and potentially even the Native American story than I did about Indigenous issues, because they just weren't appearing in the content that I was consuming.
Indeed. We're talking about a country podcast. This is a fabulous new podcast about one of Australia's most loved TV shows, A Country Practice. Mel Tate, who's playwright, journalist, broadcaster, and also Kim Lester, legendary ABC personality as well, producer.
Another personality.
One of the loveliest people in the history of the world. So there's Dr. Terrence Elliott, Shane Porteous. Yes. There's Simon Bowen, played by Grant Dodwell. Vicky was the vet who married Grant Dodwell. That was the late Penny Cook. There was Esme. There was Bob Hatfield. There was Cookie. It was a very old cast in a way. You didn't get, with the exception perhaps of Joe Loveday, you didn't get a lot of young people on the show, did you?
Do you know what's really funny about that, Rod, is Melanie and I talked about who we relate to as 40-year-olds now watching this show. We still watch it and think, oh yeah, my life's probably on par with Molly and Brendan, who were in their early 20s at the time that they joined the cast in 1981. And so was Penny Cook. She was in her early 20s when she first started on the show. And what we realise is that we're actually the same age as Dr. Terrence Elliott is in the first season.
Wow.
But I think the cast got younger. The cast got younger, I think, as the years went on.
Right.
It was definitely, and Matt Day spoke to this when we interviewed him for the first episode. He was the youngest on the cast as a 17-year-old in the late 80s. And there was, as the years progressed, there was a development of a Burrigan High storyline. So they had a few teenagers on the cast, but a lot of those younger characters were played by those weekly guest spots, I think.
One thing about having that older cast is a really interesting aspect of what made this show quite special. So one of the things as well we were talking to Matt Day about is, Rod, you know, my background is in theatre, and when we used to cast a show that we did in London years ago, we would cast it quite often with Neighbours actors and Home and Away actors. And the Home and Away actors were all a bit, they might turn up late to rehearsal, not know their lines, that kind of stuff. The Neighbours actors, they were on book, professional, really serious. There was an obvious huge cultural difference between the two shows. We were talking to Matt about this, and Country Practice actors have that same reputation in the industry for professionalism, for, you know, and he was saying that a lot of that had to do with the fact that you had these older actors who'd been around forever, who were very professional. They just wanted to get in, do their lines, do their work, and go home to their families. And so there was a real respect and professionalism that the younger actors on A Country Practice learned and then brought to the industry themselves and still continue to bring to the industry. So it's so interesting having that mix of old and young, as opposed to something like Home and Away, which is pretty much all younger actors.
I would disagree with you there, that Home and Away now has an incredible reputation in the industry for teaching kids and others how to do it right. And I think that really has changed, but that's just my
Because I'm talking 20 years ago.
Sure,
we were doing, you know, this is 20
exactly,
years. And of course, they do have those amazing actors now on A Home and Away who are graduates of a country practice. Shane Withington's on it.
Indeed.
Georgie Parker's on it. Yep. You know, it's a roll call. Yeah. So it's an interesting cultural thing that country practice did for the rest of the industry.
So I mentioned some of the well-known ones who were there at the start, and others came on later. Matt Day, you mentioned Michelle Pettigrove, Kate Raisin, Di Smith, you've mentioned Judith McGrath, Brett Climo. He was he played the vet at one point.
Michael.
God, no. Kim Wilson as well. He was able to turn characters over, I suppose, turn actors over and keep it fresh. Is that what happened? Or, were there people who stayed too long?
I think one of the really interesting things about the way that we're watching the show, which is we're jumping from 1984 to 1987 to 1990, then back to 1981, is the main cast of those 12 characters is actually vastly different every time that we jump ahead or jump backwards. That was surprising to me. The stayers are Shane Porteous, who played Dr. Terence Elliott, and Brian Wenzel, who played Frank Gilroy. They were there from beginning to end. And then a few other key characters stayed on for vast length of it. I think Gordon Piper is one of them, as Bob Hatfield. Cookie was in there for a long time. Esme started out as an extra on the show. And they saw her potential, and she grew to be the Esme that we know and love. And she was there for a long time. But you're right, a lot of the other actors came and went, and probably audiences only had a couple of years to get to know those characters before they moved on.
Now, what about some of the well-known people who turned up in those cameo roles for two episodes or four episodes? Mel, who stands out?
Well, of course, there's Nicole Kidman, who we see in one of her very earliest TV performances. And she's actually in the first episode we talk about on the podcast. And you can see her star quality from the get-go, from the absolute get-go. But one of the things that we are exploring in this podcast, so the name, the roll call of guesties is pretty incredible. It's people like Baz Luhrmann, Richard Wilkins, Bob Hawke was a guestie at one stage.
Playing himself, the role he was born to play.
Yes.
Talking about nuclear war or nuclear weapons or something.
That's right. Well, and, that brings us to another interesting thing about, the politics of this show and how closely, it was to government and the like in getting public health stories out or et cetera. One of the things we're doing is having a look at who the people were that were guesties or writers or directors on this show and what they've since gone on to do with their careers. So, of course, Nicole Kidman is a great example. She went on to be an Oscar-winning actress. But also, somebody who worked on the show for a really long time was Forrest Redlich, who was a writer and script producer, etc., on A Country Practice, really cut his teeth there and went on to create E Street.
Yes.
So it's full of people like that, as well as legends of the stage and screen, like Colleen Bird, for example, is an older actor who I think listeners of a certain vintage will remember that name. She was on the stages and basically in every television show until she died at age 97. And so people like that crop up and we tell the stories, the fascinating stories of their lives and what happened to them before and after A Country Practice too in the podcast, because that's one thing. It's this great time capsule of fantastic performers, Rod. Nowadays when somebody does a guestie on a show, we can find it easily on YouTube. Yes. We can find record online. This is all before the internet, this show. So a lot has been or gets lost, and it sort of relies on us forensically picking through these episodes and finding interesting people to remember.
So Robert Helpman also, I think he died on the show. Smokey Dawson, I think he died on the show.
Amazing.
As well.
Most guesties do die.
Tony
Collette, exactly right. Mm-hmm. Barry Crocker. But with some shows, the more it goes on, the weirder it gets. Now, you talked about E Street. The most famous character on E Street is Mr. Bad, right?
Yeah.
Now, even on Home and Away, we had Bobby appearing out of the fridge. That was a strange thing. Did anything weird ever happen? And it generally happens towards the end.
Yeah, the jumping the shark moment.
Well, did anything strange happen on Country Practice?
On 7+, the episodes only go up to 1987, but there are a few episodes here and there on YouTube as well. And one that we watched from 1990, I think we felt that it wasn't quite of the same tone as what we'd seen so far. And it was essentially a story of, and again, these were the guest characters, were two sisters who had come back to town after a tragic accident 15 years earlier, had killed their parents, and one of the sisters was paralyzed as a result of this accident. And someone is trying to kill Dr. Elliot. And the mystery of the show is which of the two sisters is trying to kill Dr. Elliot. Mm. And there's a siege, there's a hostage siege, and Dr. Elliot comes out the hero. Look, some parts of that episode are actually still quite strong, but then there are definitely, I mean, the way that they handle mental health in that episode is really not
deplorable, frankly.
Up to standard. Yeah, that's right.
All right. Now, we should mention that after the show finished, it then reemerged on Channel 10 for 30 episodes or so. You know, is that best ignored, or are you going to have to deal with that? Because I recall it as being terrible.
Yeah, I actually think so far we have ignored it. I mean, we haven't even had this discussion, Kim, have we, about what we're going to do about that? It's like we pretend it doesn't exist. It's not shot in Windsor in semi-rural New South Wales. They went and shot it down in Victoria. And from my recollection, so I have this real issue with reboots, Rod, is I think that reboots quite often, they really make things a lot fancier than the original. You know, like they get a cast that's a load better looking, the costume budget's bigger, the houses all look nicer, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's what they might have done with the reboot. You know, they forgot the essence of A Country Practice, its realness, you know, its humility, et cetera. So we haven't gone near it yet. I don't know if we will, Kim. What do you think? I mean, we probably will. If the show runs for, you know, if our podcast goes for 30 years, we probably will have to deal with it at some
We may need to cover it then. Well, yeah. I guess it comes down to when we have access to those episodes. Sometimes I think these things are worthy of discussion at least, but you're absolutely right. I think Scrubs is a good example of a TV show that changed networks and rebooted and went from being a show that was very intentionally drab and realistic, trying to portray a realistic hospital, to a show that was shot in a studio and bright and really not very watchable, and a lot of fans don't appreciate that. I think that was probably the same for this last season of A Country Practice. The other thing I read too is that it went to air on Saturdays at 5:30 p.m. I mean, it really didn't stand a chance, did it?
Well, the whole thing, the strength of the original Country Practice was Monday night, 7:30, Tuesday night, 7:30. You'd have to wait a week to find out what happened. You got 2 hours of drama every week, and it was, you know, really well done. You didn't have to wait till Saturday afternoon when no one was watching. And also the characters were not all that interesting on the reboot. So how long do you think this podcast is going to go? What's your plan? What's your hopes?
We sort of don't really know at the moment. We've got plans and episode plans and guests booked in for two series of eight. Is it, Kim? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's something. Yeah, we've got 16 episodes in the works. I'd love to see it continue. A lot of that will depend on how it's received. There's a saying in podcast world, every podcast begins with an audience of zero. Mm. And what we need to do is grow that and hope that people enjoy this as much as we're enjoying making it. And if we grow that audience, I'll keep doing it for as long as people want to listen to it.
Oh, yeah. It's like the joy of our lives at the moment. We record on Sundays, and it's just, I don't want to do anything else on a Sunday. I tell all my friends, sorry, recording, and then get this shot in the arm of, you know, Kim and I chatting to each other about this show we love. We get to catch up as friends. Plus, then we'll be interviewing one or two people who are legends in our mind, you know. It's just a joy. So, yeah, let's hope we get to keep doing it.
Who are you looking for? Who's out there that you think we really want to talk to them, and I'd love it if they could get in touch with us?
You know, there's two people that we really want to talk with that we haven't been able to get in touch with yet, and that's James Davin, who is the creator of A Country Practice. Every single interview we've had, isn't this the case, Kim? Every single interview we've had, he looms very large in the interview, you know.
He's a very respected employer. Well,
Everyone, Globe Hall of Fame. He got the Hall of Fame gold.
Oh, there. Yeah, and we're just constantly hearing about the family atmosphere he created, the way that he and his wife, Philippa, entertained the cast and crew a lot and really sort of fostered that close working relationship. So he's one, and we'd also really like to talk with Judith Cahoon, who is the most credited A Country Practice writer. Yeah, she wrote a gazillion episodes, including the one she's officially Molly's murderer. She's the one that wrote that episode. So they're two people we'd really like to talk with, but basically we want to talk to everybody.
Did she write the poem Mad Molly Jones?
This is why we need to talk to her.
Yeah, there's so many questions we need to ask.
Good luck with it. It is available right now with a new episode every 2 weeks, is it?
That's right.
With Mel Tate and Kim Lester. Thank you so much. The very best of luck with it. And people can find it wherever they find their favourite podcast.
Oh, thanks, you, Rod, so much for having us on.
Well, that's another podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.